You wouldn't expect a local police officer to demand you hand over your laptop or phone without a warrant, but CBP does, and in December, a federal judge upheld its right to do so. That decision was a blow to Pascal Abidur, a graduate student in Islamic studies at McGill University. He's the one who sued the government back in 2010 after CBP seized his laptop and kept it for 11 days. Here's his story of what happened when agents who boarded his Amtrak train from Montreal to New York took him aside for screening.
She turns on my laptop, says, "Put in your password, please." And without thinking, I just enter my password. Almost immediately, she's shocked but almost laughing, and she's signaling to her coworkers to, like, come look at what's on this screen. It was pictures of Hezbollah rallies and Hamas rallies.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
Why did you have that?
That was the question at the time. And I said, well, it's all stuff I got, either, you know, photos that accompanied New York Times and other newspaper articles, or I Google image searched and I downloaded some stuff. My research is on the Shiites of South Lebanon. So you're going to talk about Hezbollah at some point.
Are you Muslim?
I was raised atheist. My mom's French and my dad is a Jew from Brooklyn, but they raised me not as a believer.
You just chose Islamic studies because it happens to be in the headlines the last dozen years?
I would even go like 20 years. I could remember the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air being interrupted by the Gulf War. I think I have more than enough reason to be interested in it. And her reaction was, "Hezbollah?" It's not even an object of study. It's the enemy, apparently.
So what did she do?
She told me, "We can't hold up the rest of the train for you, so we're going to have to take you back to the port." I was not under arrest, but they would need to frisk me and put me in handcuffs. They took me to the port and put me in a detention cell. As soon as the door locked, I thought I was going to throw up. I was afraid that I was about to be disappeared. It sounds hyperbolic, but it's true. I really thought I was going to Guantanamo Bay.
And the room itself?
Freezing cold. Even my jacket was not warm enough. It was like a meat locker. Every once in a while, someone would come in, just ask me one or two questions. "Do you have a tattoo on your ribs? Have you ever had piercings?" Asking me questions derived from photos on my MySpace page. Eventually, they came in and they said, "Okay, we have to ask you a whole bunch of questions." And they walk me to an interrogation room.
Describe the interrogation.
Basically, every question you are raised as an American to never have to be required to answer.
Like?
What religion were you raised? What is the religion of your parents? Are you a member of any political parties or political organizations or activist groups? Have you ever been to a mosque? Have you ever been to a rally, meaning in the Middle East? Had I ever witnessed a flag burning? Would I join a rally or a flag burning if I saw one? They put me back in the cell, and a guy came and he introduced himself as a liaison from the FBI. And he asked me really, really, really detailed questions about my research. He got the most detailed synopsis of my research for my PhD that anyone had ever received, including my supervisor. He was like, "Oh, have you ever thought of working for the government?" I told him, "Maybe if you guys didn't do this to me."
So eventually they let you go.
When they let me out of the cell, there's, you know, the tables where your stuff gets examined, and my stuff is exploded everywhere. Well, let me rephrase that. Mm-hmm. My stuff is scattered everywhere. And as I'm gathering my stuff, they said, "Hey, you know, we're going to have to hold onto your laptop and your external hard drive." And then they told me, "You'll wait for a bus to come and you'll ask the bus driver if there is a seat free for you to take back to New York."
Just give me a kind of overview of what it felt like that day.
The single scariest experience of my life. I was held for 4 to 5 hours. It doesn't seem like a lot of time, but I wasn't given a phone call. No one knew where I was. They could have done anything and nobody would have known anything. I left this experience as though a bunch of gangsters threatened and intimidated me, gleeful in messing with me. When I got back to New York, I was not in a good way. I became convinced that I was being followed, that something bad would happen around me, and then I would be blamed for it. I wasn't comfortable taking the train. When I would walk in circles around blocks or randomly change direction. It messed me up for a good long while. And I had an appointment set up with the ACLU. I said, if you help me get my laptop back, I will help you guys with anything you want to do with this case. This can't happen again. It's crazy. So they drafted a letter, sent it on Monday. Tuesday morning, I got a call from Claim Property at the Champlain Port telling me, I have your laptop and your external hard drive. Where can I send it back? And I got it Wednesday.
But it wasn't working so well.
Yeah, my external hard drive had been pried open and not resealed. And the keyboard had been removed and not replaced all the way.
The contents had been copied by the government. Lots of personal stuff.
Oh, yeah. They have the right to copy it and distribute the information to whatever agencies they deem should receive it.
They can send it to foreign governments, too.
Interesting, considering in the judge's ruling, he does implicitly compare the United States to the government of Bashar al-Assad.
In what way?
That, you know, Bashar al-Assad and the allies of Hezbollah would search my laptop, so why shouldn't the U.S. government? And more importantly, that it happens so little that why should there even be a legal decision on the case? You know, the ACLU, what they wanted to do was challenge the very constitutionality of a suspicionless search. And there is as yet no policy. You know, in the constitutional challenge to the policy, the judge himself cites CBP policy saying that they're allowed to do it.
The CBP can unilaterally pass laws regarding the civil rights of citizens at the border.
And the entire territory of their jurisdiction, which extends much deeper into America than the border.
Pascal, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Brooke.
Pascal Abidor is a PhD student at McGill University.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.